Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Let's bring in Charles Robinson on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hi, Charles. How are you?
Hello, Charles.
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing this morning?
We are doing good. A little gloomy around Northeast Ohio today, though. We need a little more sun. Can you send us some sun?
Yeah, I heard. I heard it's the typical April kind of depression period.
It's our version of San Diego's June gloom today. How's that sound? But at least it's warm.
It's my favorite. You know, we have all of our corporate offices are out in L.A., or most of them are, and they all, you know, they complain when it rains 3 days in a row. I'm like, how about not seeing the sun for like 4 months? Well, overcast for 4 months. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, we'll give a little Cleveland weather on that. All right, before we get into anything else, too, I want to talk to you about, you know, this great thing that you guys do to keep a tradition alive with the All Juice team. Just explain to everybody what that is, and I know Ohio State fans will be excited about it this year, too.
Yeah, so Therese Paylor obviously passed a few years back, who was my podcasting partner, one of the national writers for us on the NFL beat. He actually started something called the All Juice team back in 2015 when he was with the Kansas City Star. And it was, you know, a lot of fans really latched onto it. He spent a lot of time breaking down film. Just talking to his fiance over the years about, the guy had like spreadsheets. He would literally work on this thing for 1 year solid by the time he would name it. And it was just something where it was players that he thought were the embodiment of like football players, not just skill, but attitude, performance, like really put everything together on the field. But it was interesting because the way he built the team was so unique. He didn't just pick an all-star team. He picked it as if he were drafting 23 players. And so he would, you know, draft a few guys in the first round, he'd draft a few guys in the second round, third. And so basically he'd try to build this team with players that embodied what he thought were, you know, the special skills of football players from rounds 1 to 7. And, you know, when he passed away, we decided to continue the team. We've done it now 4 years in a row. I've been on all 4 years, but when we first did, it was like Pete Thamel and Eric Edholm and I worked on it. Last 2 years, it's been Charles McDonald and I have worked on it. It's funny though, because when you do it, it's really a two-man operation. It takes a lot of time to do this team and we do it completely differently. Like I lean on a lot of executives, coaches to throw me names, kind of, you know, tell me, hey, here's who should really be on that team. Whereas Charles McDonald does a lot of the film work and, I don't know how Therese was doing it by himself because the two of us doing it, I mean, I'll be on the phone, you know, like a week solid with no other work on my plate, just trying to like scratch together names and help put the team together. So we really enjoyed it. And, you know, fans really seem to enjoy it. It's kind of a tentpole thing for us every single year. And, we also breakingtea.com, sells an All Juice t-shirt and hoodie, and then the proceeds from that go to support the scholarship in Therese's name at Howard University. So if anybody's interested in that, just check out breakingtea.com/Therese.
Tell me that when you were putting it together, the brainstorm hit you. This guy would be perfect for the Cleveland Browns.
Well, you know, there's definitely a guy on the team that I think – actually, there's a couple that landed on the team this year that I think would be ideal for the Browns. And I think one of them is Ladd McConkey. I think if Ladd – I mean, the odds of Ladd McConkey getting to that second-round pick, the 54th overall, it feels slim just because so many people that I've talked to across the NFL really love his game. And – you know, I had a couple of guys basically say, like, look, if Brock Bowers didn't exist in that Georgia offense, Ladd McConkey's numbers would have been ballistic. And they just love the way he, you know, sets up his routes, the way just every fashion that he plays and the part of the offense he was asked to really handle for Georgia, which is a lot of the downfield stuff, a lot of very NFL translatable routes. they just loved him. And to me, I know, you know, look, the Browns need, especially given what's coming with Amari Cooper, the decision that's got to be made there, Elijah Moore, they're going to have obviously a need at wide receiver. And I think if they could figure out a way to get him, I think he's a perfect Cleveland Browns addition. And I think when you get a little later in the draft, the running back out of USC, Marshawn Lloyd, was our running back. He's got fumbling issues, but when you look at him on tape, he just, his game translates so well to the NFL level. And, you know, he's probably a guy that will end up going maybe third, fourth round, like somewhere in the middle rounds there. Not a great running back class, but I do think he's like a middle round guy to be very, very productive and to come in and, I think, you know, be a depth player for the Browns next season, and then, you know, potentially take a larger role depending on what happens with Nick Chubb moving forward.
I wanted to ask you this just because I know this is a little off beaten what we've been talking here, but Bill Belichick not being a head coach, Mike Vrabel ending up with the Browns as an advisor. I'm curious your thoughts on both of those guys and where their stories are going next.
Well, they'll be, I mean, I don't, we'll see what happens with Bill. I know the presumption is that Bill will end up back in the NFL, you know, next season, but I don't know. I mean, he's just, it's such a very, very specific kind of coach you'd have to look for, with Bill Belichick. I don't think, you know, Bill obviously being in his 70s, there's not this idea of like, bring Bill in, he'll coach for the next decade, or, right. You know, it's really kind of a situation where I think you have to have the team built and ready to go, and he can come in and by the way, you also have to have a certain set of players that are very translatable to what he wants. And so it makes it dicey. And then now you see, obviously, there's a report that comes out today that, you know, when the Falcons were deliberating on adding Bill Belichick, that there allegedly was a conversation between Arthur Blank and Robert Kraft, and there were the question of trust, you know, allegedly got brought up in that you know, sort of pursuit by the Falcons. I can tell you from talking to people in Atlanta, right around the time when they decided to not go with Bill. Even though I think Bill was representing like, hey, I don't have to have full control personnel. Like, it doesn't have to be the way the setup was in New England. I can tell you there were people in that building, especially when it came time to have the important conversations about potentially hiring him, that did not believe him. They were like, okay, he's, you know, he can say whatever he wants, but the track record's the track record. And, you know, his functionality in New England, especially at its peak, was, you know, him having his hand in everything in the team. So how well can he do if he even were to come in and not have his hand everywhere in the building? What would that mean in terms of the performance? Would that affect his ability to be successful? So, you know, I just think Bill's a more difficult hire than people want to make it out to be. And I'm not saying he's not a great coach. He is. I just think it takes a very specific owner. It's going to take a very specific roster at a certain state of its maturation. For him to be viable. Vrabel's different. Like, Vrabel to me is obviously a much longer runway ahead of Mike Vrabel. I mean, he's a guy that I think's got maybe another 20 years in him as a coach in the NFL. And I know Vrabel was, I want to be careful how I put this, like, he had a really hard time not being in the NFL this year. Like, I think he really, really wanted to get right back in. He did not want to take the year off. And does not surprise me at all. He's taking an advisor role. You know, I in my mind, I wonder if he would have even, if someone would have offered him, if it's a really high level team, like even a defensive coordinator role, which I think if people around Mike would have been like, do not do that. Like, you are not going back in as a coordinator. You're a head coach. Sit out a year. But, you know, Vrabel, I think, is, he's similar to Bill. I think he's more flexible in terms of working with a front office if it's someone that he knows and trusts. And, you know, his players, even though he's, I think there are times where I think he's kind of a gruff personality. When you would go into Tennessee and you would talk to his players, they all loved him. I mean, pretty much all of them loved him. And he had very high expectations. He'd be very hard on guys. You know, quarterbacks, especially like Ryan Tannehill. I mean, as much as he liked Ryan Tannehill, I mean, it was very up and down relationship at times. But I think they were all fairly devastated when he went out the door because they really believed in him as a head coach. And, you know, I think there were just some personnel failures. I think the John Robinson era came back to haunt him a little bit. And obviously his relationship with ownership, I think they wanted a more collaborative, you know, effort in terms of the front office and Mike. And I don't know that Mike was there in terms of just the total trust in the changes that had been made in the front office. So Mike is a much more hireable candidate, I feel like, for teams just because of the fact that he fits more situations than maybe Bill does at this stage.
Charles Robinson joining us, Yahoo Sports senior NFL writer. This draft coming up, first round, looks like it's going to be so intriguing as we get into it, Charles. And I say that because of the quarterback spot. Real clear, Chicago and Washington and New England need quarterbacks, and they're sitting 1, 2, 3. Maybe somebody does something, trades out. But J.J. McCarthy seems to be climbing draft boards. Michael Penix, Bo Nix, especially with the Giants and the Vikings with a couple of first-round picks, and Denver and the Raiders all needing quarterbacks. How high do these guys go? Are the first three picks all quarterbacks and who we think they are? And then what happens with McCarthy and Penix?
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And Knicks.
Well, it's definitely need driven. I don't think there's any question about that. Where, you know, you see some of these people talking about, you know, hey, maybe there's five quarterbacks in the first round. Maybe there's six quarterbacks in the first round. I do think a lot of it, though, is need driven. I think McCarthy, the interesting thing about McCarthy, I wrote in late March when all of a sudden he surfaced as people were saying, like, hey, he's going to go number two to Washington, or they're really connecting him to Washington at two. I talked to a lot of people across the league. I said, you know, what am I seeing here? Is this real? What does this film look like? And I talked to executives, coaches who didn't have skin in the game, were not, you know, angling, you know, to either draft a quarterback or, you know, were in this scenario where they needed a quarterback to go up in front of their pick to push another player down, anything like that. And I was surprised that a lot of them said that McCarthy's tape, there was enough of it that, you know, hey, this idea, he doesn't have enough tape, you know, that they just didn't believe it. They said, look, he's definitely shown enough, particularly situationally, that you can make projections off of it. They really liked his ability on, you know, third and critical situations. Like, he would make big plays on third down. And then he was a guy who would turn his back on defenses in college. And you don't see that with a number of these other guys. They're operating out of shotgun. Defense is always in front of them. McCarthy was under center at Michigan. He would turn around and, you know, whether it was handing off or play action or whatever, NFL, you know, when people are looking at that tape in the NFL, they're going, I see a lot of stuff that this guy does in college that we do in the NFL. So there's not this dramatic learning curve in terms of asking him to do NFL type of things. He's already doing them at Michigan, and he's doing exactly what he's being asked. And I think that's where the Brock Purdy comparisons came in, where part of what Shanahan loves about Brock Purdy is that a large part of his game is, here's my offense. Here's what I need you to do. Go out and do these things. And occasionally, you know, you can do some off schedule things and make plays. But for the most part, I'm going to give you something and you're going to run it the way I want it. I think some people look at McCarthy as being that type and that there's value in that. But, you know, the skill set and the amount of film and maybe some of the intangibles, you know, Drake Mays, you look at him, you're like, wow, that's a big dude. That's a AFC North quarterback if I've ever seen one. That's a, you know, a guy who can play, even though, you know, he comes out of North Carolina, he's got the build where you're like, he's an all-weather quarterback who should be able to take some punishment, and he's athletic. As you said, Caleb, he's going one. You just take him off board. Jaden Daniels does a lot of things. You know, there's definitely Lamar Jackson comp, but the body's not, you know, anywhere near what Lamar Jackson is. You know, there's some questions about he wasn't asked to throw over the middle of the field, or he just didn't do it a lot at LSU. So that's a little bit of a, a worry, especially now that we're talking about it with Jalen Hurts' game in Philadelphia. But it's, as you talk to people about all these quarterbacks, you say, look, it's kind of a pick your flavor. What do you want out of a quarterback? There's one of those guys in this group, depending on what you want. And then there's a lot of experience. Penix, Nix are, what, 24? These guys are all older, have had a ton of snaps, should be able to step in right away and start playing in the NFL in terms of their experience. But I do think that a lot of it is need related. Like, across the board, most people have said to me about Penix, like, look, with that chart, his medical chart, now he's been healthy and he looked good as pro day and all these things, but still the chart's the chart. You're scared to death and you don't want to take that kind of a guy in the first round. So a lot of teams to me are just like X-ing him off or putting him on a sub board saying, okay, when the risk and the value kind of intersect, great, but that's not going to be in the first round for a Penix. Whereas like Nix, it's just the limitations in his game, more of a short to intermediate passer, has to fit a certain scheme. Again, a guy that I think at least some teams don't see as ever really being a first round pick, but because of need and what the scheme is, to potentially push him up. But as you said, it's going to be an exciting draft because beyond Caleb, we really don't know for sure what's going to happen with the quarterback stack and who's going to move and who might drop. I think it's interesting McCarthy wasn't invited, at least at this point, was not invited to the NFL draft, which at least to me tells us that the NFL is at least a little spooked about inviting that guy and having, you know, another Levis situation or, you know, the typical quarterback drop situation play out with him.
Charles, I got time for one more quick question. Just when it comes to the Browns quarterback situation, you've got Deshaun Watson. We heard from him yesterday. We're wondering about his health and how good a shape are they with Jameis Winston and Tyler Huntley and, you know, even an injured Dorian Thompson-Robinson behind him. I got about a minute.
Okay. I think Jameis is a great backup. Okay. I do like him. I think as a backup, he's got a ton of starts. He does have tools. Remarkably good guy in the locker room. Man, everybody loves Jameis. Everywhere he goes, you talk to his teammates, he's like the most popular guy anybody's met in the locker room. So I think from a support standpoint, excellent support quarterback for them. As far as Deshaun's health, here's the thing with Deshaun. I don't think you're going to see him until training camp, and I would not freak out about that. I think it's all about being conservative, listening to the doctors, and going, look, what's really important here? He's throwing now. Physically, I think, could he probably go out there, especially in like full squad minis, and just do the normal stuff? Yeah, I think he could. Do I think the doctors want him doing that? No. I think they're saying, let's just look. What's important is this guy's going to play in the regular season. He's going to be there doing every single thing you need in training camp. Just go ahead and play it safe. So I think really that's ultimately what you're going to see with him is he won't do anything for them nothing of consequence until really training camp. But I do think that's by design, and I do think that's leaning on, you know, just the doctors being like, hey, just be as conservative as possible with him because that's what's important. So I think they're going to be okay. I think they'll be completely full speed up and running by training camp, no problems. And I do like the addition of Jameis as a support role guy. I think he's really good in that quarterback room, and I think he handles that backup position actually pretty well.
Outstanding. Charles, thank you so much. We always appreciate your time. Always want to remind everybody, too, about the All Juice team. And you've got a chance, if you want to get those T-shirts, they can just check you out on Twitter, right? At Charles Robinson. Yeah, that'll work.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks, guys.
All right, no problem. Thank you, Charles. You get a chance to help out the Therese Paylor Scholarship Fund at Howard and Mizzou if you go out and get those T-shirts. Again, Charles Robinson on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.